Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. You may be seated. First case on our calendar, 07-740, Donald Kranach versus Youngstown City School District Board of Education. Mr. Fowle.
Morning, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, I'm John Fowle here with Ted Roberts representing the Youngstown City School District. I would ask to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This is a case where the school teacher was not the abuser. The school teacher, Helen Marino, in this case, assigned a creative writing journal, which was not an exercise in history, but was an exercise in fiction. The jury at the trial court level had rendered a verdict in favor of the defendant school, both on the statutory claim and on the common law negligence claim. The issue before the court today is a very narrow one. We're dealing with the child abuse reporting statute, Ohio Revised Code 2151.421, and what the language basically knows or suspects means. I believe it's clear and unambiguous language, and there's been no indication in any of the briefing to the contrary. This court has looked briefly at that language in the Yates case. And Justice O'Donnell, in his concurring opinion, stated, pursuant to the plain language of that statute, the duty to report is triggered only when an official knows or suspects that a child has suffered or faces a threat of suffering any wound, injury, disability, or condition that reasonably indicates abuse or neglect. And that opinion held further, the determination regarding whether the duty to report arose is a question of fact. And in that particular case, it involved a student's report of sexual abuse, which may or may not trigger the duty to report depending on the circumstances in the particular case. And I think that paragraph from Yates describes what we have in this case. We're dealing with the former version of the reporting statute, and again, as I indicated, the language in question knows or suspects. Whether the word suspects sets forth a basis of a subjective standard, looking at whether the reporter suspects, not an objective standard, whether the reporter reasonably should have suspected or not the reasonable man standard. The current statute has incorporated the reasonable objective or the reasonable man standard. The current statute has added new language. It has kept the knowledge end the same, and it states knows or has reasonable cause to suspect based on facts that would cause a reasonable person in a similar position or in similar circumstances to suspect.
So, counsel, you're suggesting that the old statute had the subjective standard while the new statute has been changed to create an objective standard. Is
that's
that
absolutely correct,
right,
Your Honor.
And this case arises under the former.
Correct. Absolutely. And the legislative history makes it clear that of what they're doing with this change. The legislative history discusses the change of the suspicion basis in the old prior version of the statute. And under the suspicion basis, it required the making of a report if a person suspected child abuse. The new amended statute instead required the making of a report if the reporter has reasonable cause to suspect based on facts that would cause a reasonable person in a similar position to suspect. It's interesting, if you look at the prior version, the legislature uses the word reasonable, but not in regards to knows or suspects, but a few lines below that, when they're talking about the condition of abuse. They indicate in that statute that the condition of abuse must be of a nature that reasonably indicates abuse. And this is significant. What we're looking at, the condition of abuse must be one that reasonably indicates abuse. And so under the old statute, as long as the condition of abuse reasonably indicates abuse, the reporter did not have an obligation to have a reasonable suspicion. They could have an unreasonable suspicion. And the Serdell Court of Appeals decision, I think, discusses that. And I think that's important. There's no reasonableness standard as to suspicion in the prior version of the statute. And that's significant here. In the present case, we have this particular creative writing journal. And it was established by the teacher to use as a filler in the class, to be used when the children had really nothing else to do. It was not graded and really not used for a purpose of teaching grammar or anything, but just generally to teach creative writing. The teacher in that case, I believe, looked at the journal and read it, we know, at least once. And then she looked at all the circumstances, and she did not, in her mind, believe she had a suspicion, so she did not report. Now, the jury in that case had the ability to look at all the evidence, all the surrounding circumstances, and then to determine the credibility of the witnesses and determine whether they believed that, in fact, the teacher had a suspicion or not, and they decided that they believed she did not, in both the negligence case and the statutory.
Counsel, is this case even a little more complicated? I can't figure that out from, and you know, when we read these briefs,
yeah,
we just get a somewhat of an overview of,
sure,
of the trial. I'm wondering, whichever standard, could it be also that the jury felt the punishment that they heard about was not abuse? It was corporal punishment of a child that was difficult.
Yeah.
And some parents believe in doing that and some don't. And in this state, I think it's still an open question as to I suppose it's degree and all of that, but is it possible that the jury looked at it and said, whichever standard, whatever standard you want to apply, we think that was within the parent's right to inflict this kind of punishment on the child?
I believe that's absolutely correct, Your Honor.
So that's, yeah, perhaps in the mix. While we're arguing about a legal standard, the jury could have looked at it and factually said, under whatever standard, we think this is something parents are allowed to do, and some jurors might even say this is what I do to my kids or I think parents should do.
I think the record could be interpreted by the jury that way. I believe the record did not show clear, specific signs of abuse nor the magnitude of abuse, and I think the jury could well have decided that child abuse was not proven.
I guess I'm asking, were there any interrogatories or anything like that that would disclose how the jury ended up with it?
Yeah, there were interrogatories directed to the statutory claim, and the jury found there was not a violation of the reporting statute. There was an interrogatory as to whether the defendant, appellant, was negligent, and the jury found that the teacher was not negligent. There were not specific interrogatories beyond that, though.
Okay.
It's possible the jury could have looked at that. I think we have to look at the simple language here, knows or suspects, and the way the statute's written, it's clear that it is a subjective standard. There's the term reasonable is not used before suspects. There's nothing that would indicate anything other than you have to look at the individual reporter and determine, based on the circumstances, whether they suspect it or not. There's no reasonable man standard. I think under the prior statute, a jury would look at all the evidence and determine whether they believed the official or reporter should have, or reporter suspected, whether they actually suspected child abuse. Under the new statute, a jury or trier of fact would look at what a reasonable person would or should suspect under similar circumstances. So it's clear the way the statute's written, the prior versus the present, that there was a subjective standard.
So under the present standard, you would think a teacher, upon seeing this, would read on and perhaps talk to the child and try to at least get some assessment. Is this just a kid that's mad at mom and doesn't like the discipline they're getting at home, or is this an abused child?
You know, and Your Honor, in this case, that did happen, and I think the condition that could be an indicator of abuse here, this journal, it does trigger in the official with the duty to report an obligation to do some investigation. And Mrs. Marino, the teacher here, did investigate. She did assess what the boy had done in class. She assessed whether he showed any physical signs of abuse, whether he showed any mental signs of abuse, whether there was anything in his conduct. She had a brief discussion with him about the note. So she did do some investigation, and based on that investigation, she concluded that she did not have a suspicion. So in this case, she did look into that, and I think that's what the prior statute requires. If you see a condition that's an indicator of abuse, such as a child with a bruise, you don't conclude from the bruise alone that the child has suffered child abuse. You must do some investigation.
The difference between objective and subjective, taking the facts as you've described them, which I assume is the best case scenario for your side of the case. We may hear a different slant when the other side gets up here. Under the new test, you could have all of that, and you could possibly win, but you'd have to bring in an expert to say, given her observations and her conclusions, that was a reasonable conclusion on her part.
I think that's right. I think under the subjective test or the prior version, the trier of fact looks at the knowledge or the suspicions that the individual had. Under the new version, the objective standard, the trier of fact looks at what a reasonable person would do under similar circumstances, and if they believe a reasonable person under similar circumstances would have a suspicion or not, that's what would dictate.
So actually the plaintiff would have to bring in the expert saying.
I suppose you could do it with an expert. I don't know that it would be absolutely necessary, but you certainly
How else do you get to an objective standard if you don't have some evidence of what it should be?
You could use that, but I think just like in an ordinary negligence, an auto
so
case.
You just go on
what the ordinarily prudent person would do under the same circumstances. A jury, if it's something that doesn't require expert assistance, a jury
based on common knowledge.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm not saying an expert would be inappropriate. I think certainly you could bring an expert in to discuss those
Mr.
issues.
Let me ask you: the trial judge instructed the jury on the subjective standard. The Court of Appeals reversed, remanded for a new trial, and saying it should have been an objective standard. I assume if we were to reverse the Court of Appeals, you would urge us to reinstate the verdict of the judgment of the trial court. Is
yes,
that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Might I reserve some rebuttal time?
You have a little less than 2 minutes.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Levin.
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Joel Levin. I'm here with Chris Velasic, and we are here on behalf of the family of this abused child. Let me just address Justice Pfeiffer's concern about the level of what the jury heard in the record with just a couple of the entries briefly. My mom abuses me for little things. My mom told me to get in front of the car. The door was open, and she hit me. She shut the door, and then she started hitting and punching me, screaming at me. Then he puts as an entry in terror to the teacher, whatever you do, don't tell my mom. Another entry, my mom has no problems about anything. She lies, says the F word in front of the kids, calls us assholes, beats me for anything I say, and I am scared to do anything or say anything. She says I act like a girl. Another entry, my mom does abuse me. She beat me with a leather belt and left a big purple mark on my butt for about a week. What should I do? Then, warning, don't show or tell my mom what I wrote, or I'll get the wooden spoon or metal baton. When this was shown to Child Services of this 11-year-old, who's now turning 18, the mother was stricken from seeing that child for 7 years. We, in terms of interpreting the Yates case, interpreting the revised code, looking at the 43-year history of the reporting statute, have made it clear in the state of Ohio that if there's any suspicion of abuse, we should uncover it.
Counsel, this let me take you back to my factual question. You've tried a lot of jury cases, and you know from talking to jurors, they talk about things that surprise you from time to time.
No question, Your Honor. They humble you.
Isn't it entirely possible when I'll leave the punching out of it, but when the evidence is this is an 11-year-old and she took a belt and left a welt on my butt, or took a spoon to me, or those kinds of things, that they got in there and said, you know, this kid was probably hard to handle and may have had it coming, and I've done the same thing to my kids.
Sure,
And talk themselves into the notion that under any standard, this wasn't abuse. This was discipline.
Yes, you're right. He was in the gift. He was a quiet child in the gifted and talented honors program, but that's entirely possible. However, we'll never know that because they gave the wrong instruction. And one of the things that this court and the courts of appeals have consistently said, if you give the wrong instruction, don't know, then you have to give the right instruction and find out. And if we lose fair and square, I will be unhappy, but we didn't lose fair and square.
And the wrong instruction was?
That it was a subjective standard. It was
Let me follow up on that, because I ask you the same question I asked Mr. Fowles. We get to the issue here. If you argue that even if we reverse the Court of Appeals, we should still remand it for further proceedings, apparently on Mr. Mercer's testimony. Tell me what's your argument on that?
Sorry, I lost you on that, Your Honor. I apologize.
I'll read it to you because I think it's important. Even with the Court to reverse the Seventh District's decision and deem the standard, and make sure I'm reading from Appellee's brief, and deem the standard be subjective one, there still remains a Seventh District's ruling on Professor Mercer's improper testimony.
Mercer, I misheard you.
Professor Mercer.
I'm sorry. Kathleen Mercer was allowed to testify as to the meaning of the statute, and she testified that in order for the statute to be met, anyone had to look at the child's demeanor, the child's behavior, visible signs of abuse, the veracity of the child, whether it was a bruise or a serious disfigurement, whether the injury was permanent or temporary. That's not the statute, and that is not her role, and that got the entire case completely out of hand.
Counsel, I was interested in that, and it does boil down to a duty to investigate.
On behalf
of the teacher or whoever observes this. And I'm wondering, opposing counsel said if a teacher sees a large bruise on a child's face or some other mark, and they ask the child how that happened, and they give a plausible explanation, then the duty is not present there to report, because the teacher reasonably believes that the child has an explanation. Would you disagree with that?
No.
Okay. So in,
If there's abuse and the child said, I fell down the stairs, that would be the end of anything.
Pardon me?
Yeah, if the child said, yes, the reason I'm beaten up is because I fell down the stairs, then that would be the end of the inquiry.
Well, I guess the teacher has to look at something and say, okay, is this a reasonable explanation? For example, if, you know, my brother hit me or my brother punched me in the eye, we had a fight last night. And I guess it would be the teacher would have to take into consideration the number of incidences that are as opposed to a knee-jerk reaction to immediately call children's services when a child shows up with a black eye. And I guess that's what I'm asking.
But the problem is not that he came in with a black eye, is that he reported that he was scared to death of his mother, that his mother beat him, that she humiliated him. There's stuff in the Youngstown school that you can't call boys girls.
Counsel, yeah. I understand what's present in this case, but we're not only writing for this case. What I'm concerned about is the duty that we to investigate on behalf of the statutorily mandated reporter.
It's a reasonableness standard.
Okay.
And I think it's a reasonableness standard, but I don't think that an expert interprets, you know, defines a statute for a jury on the one hand, and I think on the other, the objective reasonableness. I think that an abused child, let me put it this way, should have the same rights as somebody who drives a car on Broad. If they're hit and somebody wants to, and there's a claim made, they have to show the other side acted unreasonably. I think our children deserve the same protection as we do as drivers. That's all I'm saying. And I think that that's what the legislature said when the legislature put in the statute the word reasonably indicates. I mean, I don't know what that word reasonably indicates in the middle of this revised code section unless it's an objective standard. And I think that all they did when they revised this statute, which has been in effect in various forms for 43 years and 30 revisions, before we get too careful as to what they meant over decades of legislature, there's been 30 revisions, and what the revision after this said is there's no liability at all. They took away the civil liability, the right to sue. So in that they remorphed the statute in a way that had other grounds, who knows what they meant. But they may well have, it's just as easy to say that they're bolstered the reasonableness standard from before as that they changed it. There's no indication one way or another. And given the fact that there's no civil liability under that statute anymore, it would be even more of an indication that they weren't concerned about these kinds of cases, because these kinds of cases are coming to a halt.
So, Mr. Levin, it's really the statute as it existed before that we need to focus on, is it not?
Yes.
And if the judge had given the statutory language to the jury, just recited the statute instead of interpreting it, you would not be here. Is that correct?
I don't know that I wouldn't be here, but well,
that's what he did. That's what the judge did.
But I think the judge said it's subjective. It's a subjective standard, yeah. Not an objective standard. And I think it is an objective. I think in civil liability, Your Honor, we have an objective standard. Pardon me. We have. It's interesting that the school board cites. Pardon me. Give me some water, please, Chris. Cites all these criminal cases. Criminal cases, we do have subjective standard. Did they really mean it? What was really going on? That's how we run the criminal system. So if someone is ignorant or inattentive or not all there, pardon me, then we don't hold them to criminal liability. That's not how we run the civil system. We run it on an objective standard. We don't ask whether the car driver is coming at you. We don't ask what they're doing and what their mental state is. And we don't want to hear, and I think this is what the school board is saying, that in that they prove that a particular teacher is deaf, blind, and lunatic, that they get a free pass. I mean, that is the essence of their brief. And I think that what the legislature said in it and what this court said in Yates to protect children is that they at least get the break of an auto driver.
Mr. Levin, didn't the statute add a reasonableness standard when it was amended?
It added a second reasonableness standard. It added a second because the original statute has the word reasonably indicated. It also stripped liability. So it's hard, Justice O'Donnell, it's hard to know what the thinking of the legislature was, because it's not any, there are no suits like this. So if it says, is it addressing the suit of the minor Cranack boy, the fourth grader, and protecting him and allowing him to then sue a teacher who's inattentive, they took that out altogether. So I agree they bolstered the reasonableness standard, but I think they bolstered it. I don't think they, and I think that in the opinion that was quoted from Yates, your concurrence, you say nothing different, and you use the word reasonableness in the standard. I think it's a fairly minimal standard. And by the way, and I think it was in response to question that was brought before, and it was Chief Justice Moyer, about expert, we put an expert on the objective standard. That is, we put the Dean of Education at Kent State University on, who had also had a specialty in children who came from abused households and how they were educated in the state. And the dean and the dean at Kent State laid this out, and I think that would be perfectly proper, and we attempted to meet that.
Does a subjective standard have a reasonableness component?
No. No.
Does it have a subjective standard that's totally unreasonable and there be no liability?
I believe that's the argument here, because I think that's what a subjective standard is. If we draw our attention to the criminal law, it is a subjective standard. If people have no idea what's going on, they get a free pass. I mean, they don't get a free pass. They may end up in a mental institution. Drivers don't get that. It's reasonableness.
Well, isn't that where the second part of the statute that you cited is sort of the protector? It says the reasonably a condition of a nature that reasonably indicates abuse or neglect of the child, so that the first part, the subjective part of the statute, arguably, goes to the teacher's understanding or knowledge or personal belief about what's happening, but the second part of the statute says that there has to be a reasonable indication that there is abuse. I mean, the teacher couldn't just, or the reporter couldn't just make something up under this, if you assume the statute's subjective, could they?
No, I mean, I think I'm agreeing with
Isn't
you.
That the protector?
I'm not sure that no or suspects makes it subjective by itself. I think that the interpretation that one would use under Ohio civil law is that in all circumstances, unless clearly contrary, we have an objective standard. That's how we run the system of civil justice we have.
So you're saying essentially your argument is there's no place for a subjective standard any place.
No, there's a higher standard. If there's that here, the no or subject is that objectively you have the one standard, but if they have any suspicion subjectively based on greater knowledge in that these are trained individuals, the statute includes doctors, emergency room workers, social workers, teachers, and they have any suspicion, they're held to the higher standard, because what the legislature, I think the fair interpretation, what the legislature wanted to do is protect every child. Every which way. And what this court said in Yates is, and I just quote one sentence, child abuse is a pervasive and devastating force in our society, considered a problem of epidemic proportions. That's the finding of this court, and not a finding in this court, I think, that was argued about within the Yates opinion. And regardless of Yates and the validity of where we are in the public duty rule, the problem is endemic. Here, a child is crying out. A child is in terror. Don't show my mother. What happened was that Mrs. Marino was going to return the journal to the mother the last day of class. That's why child services got called. The child became hysterical. Finally, it dawned on somebody, the principal, to bring in child services. Finally, child services took that child away, and the child never saw the mother again.
But the jury must have heard at least most of that evidence that you've just
cited. They heard it all.
And they
made an inexplicable ruling. I agree with Justice Pfeiffer on that. But that said, we should have at least had the fair chance to give them the right standard, keep out a pseudo expert who interprets the statute and defeats the fundamental purpose. This child was beaten for another, beaten and abused and terrorized for nothing for a year. And whether it was a creative journal or whether it was a history report or whether he simply uninvited went up to the teacher and said, "Teacher, I am being abused." Once she knows, we're into the statute.
Counsel, the Court of Appeals puts forth a couple paragraphs of what the judge said. In the first paragraph, it says, or the condition or nature that reasonably indicates abuse of the child, or is it the next paragraph? The statute sets forth a subjective standard, and you must determine whether defendant Helen Marino in her mind knew or suspected or suffered or faced a threat of suffering. Is it that you say the court went off the tracks on? What specific language?
I was trying to find the exact place where you're
reading. It's at page 5 in the Court of Appeals opinion.
Page 5.
The first paragraph to which Justice Piper referred is just a quote from the statute.
Right.
Second paragraph, then the judge elaborates. And I had the same question. Is that
right? It said that the statute sets forth a subjective standard, because willful ignorance, blinding yourself to the obvious, whether or not there's a subjective paranoia by the teacher, that suddenly becomes the case.
It's that one sentence that paragraph that you indicate requires reversal and retrial.
Right. But what's hard to judge here, I mean, although it's in the transcript for the court, is that's the way the case was tried, because objectively there's no defense to this. That the testimony went to how she didn't really know, and the pseudo-expert Mercer came in and talked about subjective. The opening statement, the closing argument, if you read the whole thing, it was all about that. This was a single focus case. So sometimes I understand that an instruction where there's one word different in a 30-page instruction, a one-week trial, seems a lot to reverse. But I think that the Court of Appeals, looking at that, saw this was the only defense they had. Objectively.
Okay. And you had an expert there to testify.
Dr. Paul Zients,
yeah.
Dean of the School of Education at Kent State University.
And they had a pseudo-expert.
They didn't have an expert on that at all. They had Professor Mercer, who's a law professor, who's never taught 1 minute in any school ever other than law school. And we can debate as to whether law school is really teaching children. But she had no experience, and she didn't talk about what school teachers did. She talked about she said, "I'm the judge. Let me tell you the legal standard." She co-opted the judge, and she co-opted the legislature, and they had no expert.
And you were objecting to that, I assume.
Yes. Yeah. Motion in limine and during the testimony, both.
You've used your time, Mr. Levin.
Pardon?
You've used your time.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Mr. Fowle, you saved a little more than a minute of your time.
Generally, I don't like to argue the facts, but I'm compelled a little bit. My review of the record and remembrance of the trial was that there was no evidence of this boy being beaten and abused for a year after the purported time of the journal being written. I don't think the record reflects that, and I think it's important to state that.
Well, the teacher's knowledge of that would be the relevant, whether he was beaten or not. Isn't it the most important fact? What did the teacher know?
Right, and I agree with that. I just want to clarify.
That would really only go to damages anyway.
Correct.
It?
The discussion about expert Mercer, she made statements about the totality of circumstances and other things that not only did the liability expert, but plaintiffs also put on an expert, Dr. Battisti, who talked about similar issues. So there were many of these similar issues that were already in evidence that Dr. Mercer was just adding her opinion on. So I do believe that a reversal would be appropriate.
Counsel, we did not accept that proposition, yeah. I don't believe. So how can we, if we reverse on this particular issue that's here, why would that not still necessitate a remand to the trial court for a retrial using this standard that you're arguing for?
Well, that issue was raised in the briefing, and I raised it in rebuttal. I think we would be entitled to a reversal, but certainly if the court's not looking at that issue, I understand your position, Your Honor. The issues on the language of the prior statute, the reasonableness discussion deals only with the condition of abuse. Was the condition a reasonable indicator of abuse? That is, was the black eye something that reasonably could signify abuse? I use an example in the brief. A child wearing a blue shirt to school and the teacher reporting that, wearing a blue shirt would not be a condition that would be a reasonable indicator of abuse. So that would be an example, I think, of how the statute is interpreted there. There's no reasonable language, no objective standard language in the statute concerning the knows or suspects basis for reporting. And I think that's really the key issue here. The legislature's clear that they're making a change to the statute and they're putting in a reasonable man standard, an objective standard, because they spell it out very clearly in the new version of the statute. So I believe the old statute, the prior version we're dealing with, does set forth a subjective standard. I think the trial court in his...
You need to sum up. Red
yes,
light's been
yeah. I think the trial court in his instruction basically just paraphrases the subjective standard, and I think it was appropriate.
And, counsel, you're saying that if we reverse and find in your favor, this case should go back for retrial, or the trial verdict should be reinstated? I'm still unclear
based
on what you told Justice Cupp.
Right. I believe the case should be reversed in its entirety, but Justice Pfeiffer raised the issue that the discussion of Dr. Mercer's testimony was not accepted by the court. I believe certainly it should be reversed on the subjective standard that the Court of Appeals held that there was an objective standard and submitted back on that basis.
To the jury.
To the jury.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fowle. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.